You're listening to the Own a Build podcast, where each week, Paul Hemming from C-Link interviews experts on how small and medium-sized developers can level up their business through intelligent construction management.
Hello and welcome to episode number 29 of the Own a Build podcast. With me, your host, Paul Hemming, and co-host, producer, general mucker of mine, Mr. Liam Curley. Liam, I feel very much like I haven't talked to you very much this week. What is happening in your life? What's going on?
Well, I was listening, you know, the way that we record these, obviously, sometimes they're in batches or whatever, not as they come out. So I was just listening to the last week's one where you were super excited. You just got your England final tickets and then you're off to Italy. So that didn't turn out so well, did it?
Well, that's true. So we staggered it. I went away for a couple of weeks. I'm back now. We're back kind of in rolling along with them correctly. The last one it was the day before or 2 days before the European Championship final. I went to the game. We lost the following day. I went with my girlfriend to Italy and spent 10 days getting told. I was all getting called all kinds of things, getting mocked. Yeah. And yeah, you're right, in retrospect.
Yeah, but did she mention the football at all? Or?
She did, her family did, her friends did, everyone did. So yeah. Lovely break in Italy. But what's been happening with you, Liam?
Well, nothing. You've been away, haven't you? So I just stopped.
Without me, everything kind of goes to halt in your life, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That makes sense. I think I'm going to bring a little bit of joy to your life today, Liam, because today's guest, I know you have some roots in New Zealand. And so I thought, he looks down, he's not feeling well. How can I give him a little shot in the arm, cheer him up? So I brought a Kiwi onto today's show just to cheer you up. Today we're joined by Yves Lebex, I hope I've pronounced that right. I probably pronounced it wrong, who is a director from Rev Consultants. How are you doing, Yves?
I'm really good, thanks today, Paul. That's awesome. So you're a Kiwi, Liam. What's your roots?
I'm not, that's the way you, my dad is a Kiwi, and he's on all that side of family. Well, you know, they're Irish, moved to New Zealand, that kind of thing. So they're from.
He's always wearing an all black shirt. If he isn't wearing that black shirt, he's always wearing an all black shirt.
It's just only because I've probably got five shirts. One of them's an all black shirt. Where are you from, Eve?
I'm from Whangarei, which is in the north, a few hours north of Auckland.
Ah, see, I don't know that bit very well. No. I go to the south when I can.
Oh, fantastic. It's so beautiful down there. Well, I'm happy to be here, guys. So thanks for having me today, even if it is just because I'm a Kiwi.
Well, it's not just for that reason, but that does help. But tell us, Eve, I know that you've just come back from a trip to New Zealand. You were there this month. Mm-hmm. What is it like spending 2 weeks alone in a hotel room quarantine? Did you go insane?
I thought I was going to, but luckily that didn't happen, crisis averted. Basically, I actually had a pretty good time. I had a really nice room at the Novotel. I could go for very heavily monitored by security and military walks around the car park each day. And the food was pretty good, and I could order things from the supermarket. It basically was a yoga retreat. For one,
with the military watching me,
exactly, my every move, yeah, pretty much. It was fine. I was really worried about it. I think people have different experiences, but I lucked out. I think
excellent. Well, I'm pleased that you survived because it does sound daunting.
I wish I could go in quarantine in New Zealand.
You'd love then. 2 weeks of peace and quiet, Liam, with no one bothering you. It's your dream come true.
£1,500. No, maybe not the cheapest, but
I'd pay that.
So guys, as much as we could talk about this for a very long time, we have actually got an episode to jump into here. So the title of today's episode is The Art of Tendering. And I have brought in the master of tendering, Eve. So Eve, tell us, and just to give the listeners some context, and help us understand your background, your expertise. Tell us about what you do and your experience in the industry.
Absolutely. So I am a quantity surveyor. And
yes.
Yes, we love quantity surveyors on this podcast.
We do. Yeah. Liam doesn't, but we love
him. Yeah, he's outnumbered. Love him.
Big fan.
Obviously. Yeah. What's not to love?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Exactly. So most of my experience is civils, but I've also worked on buildings. I worked for Multiplex on a few projects. I worked on one Blackfriars briefly towards the end. Yeah, exactly. Very beautiful. I was only on it for about 4 months, like right at the end. So I don't know how much I can claim it, but it's certainly a bit of a landmark, isn't it? So
take it.
Yeah, exactly. And I worked on a couple of other projects for them. And then about 2 years ago, we set up, myself and my husband, who is a civil engineer project manager, set up a consultancy purely tendering for subcontractors called Rev Consultants. Did that for 2 years, really enjoyed it, but found that we were getting a lot more satisfaction from teaching our clients what they needed to know themselves. So that's around risk, what tenders to go for, you know, how to put together a really great tender submission, how to read a contract, things like that. So we developed a course called Get Ready to Tender, a coaching offer, and we're also doing workshops all based around subcontract education. And we both, all of our experience, we've got combined kind of more than 25 years experience working for main contractors. So we really understand what main contractors are looking for in tender returns, and we bring that to bear for our clients.
So excellent. So effectively, you are acting as tutors, if you, for want of a better phrase, for subcontractors, helping them improve their business development, helping them improve their submissions, helping them to handpick the right tenders, know exactly what to look for, which, funnily enough, Liam and I have been talking about separately with what we do this week. So very, very interesting. And I like to get beaten up because...
Is that why you're a QS? Now
well,
I
that's,
understand.
Number one, that's why I'm a QS, but...
You're not supposed to talk about flight control. Number one rule, from what I hear.
I'm going to get in trouble this weekend. So a few weeks ago, I'll give you the context, Liam. Now, a few weeks ago, you'll remember we invited onto the show Rachel Ricketts to critique what I had suggested was a really good way to set up a project team under construction management. And if you remember, she had a slightly different view. I felt a little bit bruised during that process. We came out of it okay, but you know what? I thought
that was my favorite episode.
Exactly, that's what I thought. Why don't we do it all over again, Liam? So, in episode 3 of the Own the Build podcast, I talked about what I consider to be the best way to manage subcontract tendering from the person who is issuing out the tenders as opposed to being the subcontractor. I'm so sad that I even wrote an ebook on it, which I'm sure everyone is now rushing to go and read. But as an expert on the other side, if you're effectively tutoring subcontractors how best to issue their submission. So I wanted to kind of go over what I had discussed in episode 3, get your opinion on it, being someone that obviously sees a huge amount of tenders come in from clients. And I want to understand from your perspective as a subcontractor, for you, what do you want to see in a tender? So for you, what is subcontract tendering beyond just asking for a quote?
Okay, so firstly, I'm not going to beat you up because I think if you're on main contractor side or you're on subcontract side, the aim is the same, right? You want to make sure that the person who employs you, if you're a subcontractor, the person who is your client is a main contractor, or if you're a main contractor, the person you're bringing on, that you're the right fit, that the price is right, that it's allowed for risk appropriately, and that there's a good project outcome for all, which this is the way that, you know, things should be going. That's very collaborative. And that would be that it's delivered on time, on budget, and also that subcontractors walking away feeling that they, you know, have actually made some profit, that they're happy, and that they'd work for that client again, because you want to keep your supply chain, you want to maintain them, right? That's the ideal. So I think we're very much on the same kind of page there. In terms of what is tendering about, it's not just about the price. That's, I think, the most important key thing. It's about getting the right person in. It's about making sure that the price is correct. And by that, I mean that it's allowed for everything, that you're not going to have unexpected surprises in the form of loads of variations or a lot of dispute or delays because the scope of work isn't fully understood, etc. So it's really about setting the tone for the project works. I don't think that there's enough emphasis put on how important tendering is to project success. And so that's, yeah, right? It's like it's the start. It's the start of your relationship. It's the start of making sure that the project is successful. And it seems to be the last kind of thing that we're looking at and thinking about, because we're on site, everything's busy, we're on existing projects, or we're on site, we're partway through the works, and we're, you know, everyone's rushing around trying to get things done, and we're not paying attention to this really, really key part of the project.
I completely agree with you, and we're building a business on that basis, so obviously that's something that we would agree with. But let's say I'm the developer or a main contractor, someone who is sending a subcontract tender out. You see loads of them. What in a tender completely turns you off and makes you think, oh, I'm really not interested in this, or this doesn't feel right?
Yeah, okay. So if it's on a doesn't feel right scale, there's a few things. I think if you have a really common thing that happens with a lot of our clients, we get these phone calls, I've just received an invitation to tender. I'd love to work with this client, but they've sent me 100 documents. It's overwhelming. So I think that one thing that we see, and that I really don't think is the bit to the benefit of main contractors, is A, not a lot of thought going into what's being sent out, or so risk averse. It's like, let's just send everything. So let's send them every single drawing, every single survey, everything, and not kind of making it really clear on what's actually included in the package. So that never feels great, because the point is, in construction, there's a knowledge gap a lot of the time, right? There's a bit of a gap. So you have main contractors, they've got people working for them who have quantity surveying degrees or, you know, civil engineering degrees, and they're very educated and experienced, and they're doing this stuff all day. And a lot of our clients, for our demographic anyway, they've come off the tools, they've built a successful business, they don't necessarily understand every in and out of contract law or every in and out of estimating. And there should be a point where main contractors, in the interest of building great relationship with their subcontractors and in the interest of getting really excellent tender returns back, should be making it easy. You know, not that they're taking on, you know, not that they're kind of going away and doing all of the work for them or anything like that, but just that collaboration piece, working with them to get to a good tender. So a couple of things that don't sit right with me is that when you're getting just this overwhelm of documents, they don't all need to be there. And the other thing is if there's a lack of relationship interest. So if we have a subcontractor speaking with us, they're like, I'm keen to do this tender, but I haven't been able to get them answering my emails and I haven't been able to get them on the phone, that's a big red flag for me, because the relationship isn't there. Are they really interested in getting your tender return, or are they just looking for to build up numbers? And how are they going to be to work for if that's the approach that they're taking at tender stage?
It's so frustrating, isn't it? I mean, I see it so often. And that's kind of what I was trying to touch on in my ebook. I'm plugging my ebook. Everyone go and have a look. But
it's really good. Excellent read. See.
Oh, fantastic.
It's great.
No, one of the things, and these are simple things, I actually think it both sides of the, whether you're a subcontractor or you're the buyer, let's call it, so whether you're a main contractor or developer, you're the buyer. So if you're the buyer, it has a huge impact, in my opinion, if you pick up the phone and say, I've sent you a tender, I'm going to explain it to you for 5 minutes, and I'm going to explain why I want you to price it, and I look forward to receiving your price. Subcontractor thinks, oh, this is amazing. This guy or girl is someone who I can build a relationship with. I think I can pick up the phone and talk to them, et cetera, et cetera. And by the same token, I think a big slice that many subcontractors miss is they receive the tender and they just go into what I would have feel is like a shell. We think, well, have they communicated? Have they opened it? Have they got any questions? When are they going to return it? Are they going to return it? So communication back from the subcontractor to say, I've received this. If we've got any questions, I'm going to come back to you. And just that alone, whether you're on the buying side or the subcontract side, helps you both think, oh, there's a relationship here to be built. So for me, that's something that really echoes with how I feel about the process and how many tenders fail. Is communication is such a big part of it, but definitely as well, narrowing down the document. So many times you see a document dump of 100 and say, sift through that, go and deal with it, guys, and get the price back. Whereas a phone call can say, look, I've sent you 100, but actually this folder is the folder that I want you to focus on. That's where all the roofing elements are. If you want to have a conversation once you've read it, that would be really great. I'm happy to do that. Those kind of things will actually build
a successful tender process in my view.
Completely agree, Paul. And how long does that take to give that subcontractor? A couple of minutes? And then if there's something they're not sure about or there's a concern they have, this doesn't make sense on this drawing. How about this interface? Something doesn't align here. These quantities don't seem correct against the drawing. If they're going to be happy enough to pick up the phone and give you a call and have a chat about that, then that's great for main contractor side too. So it's going to ease the whole tender process. But as you say, it's a two-way street and subcontractors need to, they do go into a shell in my experience as well, and there needs to be a bit of proactiveness, picking up the phone. This is when you can expect a tender return back. Is there a site visit? I'd love to come and take a look. Can we discuss further on this this specific issue? And just starting to build that relationship, because tenders are won on trust ultimately. And if you can build that through relationship, you can put yourself into that position of being really trusted with a little bit of communication.
Why do you think that subcontractors go into a shell?
Interesting question. So I think part of it, I think there's a couple things. One thing I think is potentially the that overwhelm from getting a huge amount of documents and just thinking, I'll put that to the side for now because there's so much to look at. So it's not necessarily a quick response from that perspective. And the other thing I honestly think that the knowledge gap has a bit to do with that. A feeling of if I speak to the client and I tell them that I don't fully understand this bit here, or, you know, if I speak to them before I've had a chance to look through it, then maybe they'll catch me out that I might not know as much as they do about this. Mm. And I think potentially the other thing. Yeah, exactly. And I think potentially the other thing is too, we notice with a lot of our clients that they're reluctant to say no to tenders. And so I think sometimes they're just thinking, oh, I'm not that keen on this one, but I'll put it in so I can get a price and I'll price it high so that I don't win it. And we don't agree with that approach at all, I think. Really positive, proactive no, but I'll attend a few next time. I'm just really busy, or we don't actually undertake this type of construction methodology, but give us a call next time. We'd be keen to work with you on other projects. It's like a really great thing that you can do for relationship building as well.
100%, 100%. I totally agree. And
we're not beating each other up. Look at that.
Well, this is, I'm happy. I'm smiling. Liam looks like he's pretty upset about this. He wanted me to be going through hell here, but we'll talk in a little bit more detail about how to craft tenders, if you like, after this break, Eve.
I wanted to take a quick break from the show to share a message from our sponsor, Seelink. Seelink is software designed to streamline the process of subcontract procurement. It's a platform that helps SME developers and main contractors stay agile whilst replicating the commercial scale and savvy of large contractors. If you want to save a guaranteed minimum 5% against budget construction costs on your next project, head to www.get.c-link.com/podcast to find out more. If you're driving or working out right now and didn't catch that URL, don't sweat it. We've included the link in the description box for this episode. Now, let's get back to the show.
What I want to talk about now is a bit more detail about how a buyer can best educate a subcontractor in a tender. So I always consider, I know more, if I'm the main contractor of QS and I'm buying, I know more about this project, I need to explain it to you so that you can quickly give me your price. That's how I kind of view it, you're kind of educating. So I am really obsessed, QS talk again, Liam, with pricing documents and completing BOQs or measures. So as part of the tender, I would say, so let's say it's the roofing, you would include a measure of the roofing and say, you can remeasure it if you want, but this is a pricing document, I've measured it, can you price it? What are your thoughts on pricing documents and measurements?
Okay, so I have a few thoughts on this. I don't think it's always super clear cut, to be honest. I think, like, as you know, if you've got a bit more of a design element or if something's very specialist, it may make sense to ask your subcontractors to take a look at it and take a look at the measures and what they think would be involved. But generally speaking, I think you do want to be including a bill of quantities. I think from a main contractor's perspective, it's professional. You should be doing the work yourself. Like, you should have the professionals in-house, or, you know, if your team's really busy or whatever, you're not 100% sure if you're confident in them, I don't know, but, you know, there's consultancies that can that put together BOQs, you know, so there's always a way. And I think that it's just a really professional approach to put it together. It shows confidence in yourself as a company that you're happy to put those measures together. I think there's an element of, why wouldn't you? Like, you're not confident in your team to take the measures.
I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah. That's a really nice way of putting, actually, the confidence angle. I've never thought of it like that. But absolutely. And also, if they're at tender stage themselves, they must be doing a measure. So to then be at contract stage, where's that measure gone? Why are you not willing to, why are you not willing to share it with me? Again, I always feel like that's a bit of a red flag. I think just
Exactly. Is there somewhere in the background? Why is it not being shared? And there's going to be a reason there. I don't know
that they are all doing measures, though. I think certainly on smaller developments, so say something below 10 million or 5 million, I don't think that they are all doing.
I think they should be.
They definitely should be, but I don't think they are because why? Yeah. Because I've worked on so many projects where you don't get a bill of quantities. So, like you say, if they had it, why wouldn't they send it?
Well, I can share something with you on that if you want me to. So I've worked procuring for main contractors some packages previously in my working life where they have not wanted to share bill of quantities. So I can share some of the rationale behind that. There's an idea that if this is an interesting one to talk about because there's different layers with this, but there's an idea that if you send it to the subcontractor and they take the measures, then the risk lies with them. Let's not share with them. Let's let them take the risk on this. And I think, again, I still think that comes down to maybe a little bit of confidence in measures too, but there's a little bit of pushing the risk down the line, which I don't think is a very, again, very professional, very collaborative or kind of correct approach. As you say, Liam, there's probably some sites where maybe they just had a budget price to start with and they've actually not fully taken the measures for each package as design has developed. However, I believe that they should be because they should be owning those measures and they should have confidence in them if they're going to operate as a main contractor, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And on, I talked about this in episode 3, that is the rationale is, well, I don't want to take the risk that these measurements are wrong because there'll be a variation down the line. I'll give it to the subby, which number one is, like, in terms of relationship building, obviously is pretty, pretty poor. And in terms of getting your tender back quickly is pretty counterproductive.
But and as more, as a subcontractor, you could still find some. You could still find variations if you want to, if you produced a bill of quantities.
You're actually
it's not
giving
just
them
the bill of quantities. Yeah. That's if you're thinking like that, you know, there's drawings. A drawing's missing. Certain details missing.
Even beyond that, my view would be send them the measure that you have done. Say, we're happy for you to add to that measure, comment on that measure. The measure is remains your responsibility, but we're going to compare like for like in those tenders. And by the way, it will be a lump sum fixed price contract, not subject to remeasurement anyway, which kind of removes the risk of the measure, but allows you both to benefit from it, if that makes sense. So
definitely. That's something I'm interested in talking about, actually, because we do see that really commonly, that when a bill of quants is included, that almost always within the tender documents or within the contract, there is a clause saying, you know, obviously for lump sum, saying the measures are your responsibility. And that's why I feel a little bit two ways about the bill of quants situation, because from a subcontract perspective, if they need to get in and fully price up a bill of quants, at least they're really connected with what the scope is and they're sure of the measures. But we're in this situation where for most of our clients, they're not actually fully clicked into the fact that if they receive a bill of quants, from their perspective, they're like, oh, client's done the measures. Put their rates against it, here's the price, send it in. Not really fully realizing that that actually is their responsibility, those measures as well. So I think that we can fall into complacency, and that's a big concern that I have about bill of quants being sent out. I mean, I still believe that they should be, I just don't think, and I think maybe that's part of the subcontractor education part, is at least sense checking the largest values and the largest quants and making sure that you're comfortable with them and the scope really carefully against the bill of quants and putting below the line items, you know, if something or qualifying it out or whatever you need to do if something doesn't kind of add up.
So together with the bill of quantities, you would want to see a scope of work which talks to the bill of quantities. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And also the amount of time, the amount of tenders that we receive, that there's conflicting there's conflicts between the scope and the bill of quants and the drawings, and the subcontractor's left there trying to piece together what's going on. That shouldn't be happening. It should be so clear what's to be included in the contract, and it shouldn't be, oh, well, let them work it out, because how does that help main contractors? It's not good for the project. It's not good for delivering on time and on budget and avoiding dispute.
I think as well with the main contractor side and developer side, I think sometimes they underappreciate how in demand good subcontractors are.
Yes.
And that if you're not going to treat certainly if you're looking for new subcontractors, or you know, your supply chain, if you're not going to treat them right from the start, they're not going to be interested. They're busy enough to say, I'm not interested. And then you're going to be left with the people that aren't busy.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're not busy for a reason normally.
Exactly. I think sometimes we're very short-sighted about the way that subcontractors are being treated, forgetting that this isn't just this project. We've got another one after this and another one after that. And who's going to want to work for you if you're not coming to the party in terms of being a good client to work for sure?
Yeah, it's a fascinating conversation, because this is just the state of the industry as we see it. Even subcontractors, I always thought, sounds like subservient almost as well. It just feels like the culture is at the bottom of the food chain, and therefore, yeah, we've got to get some roofing done, but send it out to 10 people and we'll just get the cheapest or whatever. Whereas what you're actually suggesting, Eve, is that if you want a tender, put together a nice scope of work. Just has to be relatively simple, saying, I would like you to price for X, Y, and Z, all as on the measure. You'll see that item X is item X on the bill of quants, item Y is Y, et cetera, et cetera. And then I'm going to call you for when I send it, and I'm going to call you for 2-3 minutes. Say, have you got any questions? If you've got any questions, ask them. I'm here. I look forward to receiving your response. If you do that, you as yourself and as representing all the different subcontractors that you work with, who, by the way, are subcontractors who want to be educated, they want to grow their business, and they want to improve, as subcontractors who are working with you, you're going to reach those good group of businesses and not set off alarm bells. You're actually going to set off, wow, this is a company that I really want to work with. And that doesn't mean just because they're in this good group that they're then going to be super, super expensive. They can find intelligent ways to economize and deliver a good tender to you and a good build. But as Liam, you just said, you're kind of removing the need to go to this tier below of people who are less busy and less interested in developing really great projects. So,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's crazy. And what you said there about kind of sometimes subcontractors being treated like the bottom of the food chain, I really don't like that. That really bugs me. And I think that's a lot of what we're doing with that education, is we're trying to encourage these guys, empower them to have a little bit more, get a little bit of that control back, just a little bit, because they know what they're talking about. They understand contracts and they understand tendering, and they kind of can make sure that they're going for those, you know, those better clients and things like that. We can just kind of give them a little leg up. But yeah, it bothers me.
It genuinely bothers me.
Yeah.
We call them specialists in our business, because we don't consider them to be subcontractors. We consider them to be specialists. And this is another thing that we try and say to our clients who are buying, is if you can accept, these guys know all about steelwork, architectural metalwork, roofing. You don't. They're the specialists. If you can tap into their expertise and bring it into your business through subcontracting, and you do it well, your business is going to be so much better. So I completely agree with you on that as well.
Totally. And it comes down to collaboration, and like things like early contractor involvement are very interesting. Like, I'll be interested to see how that starts to play out and become much more a part of the tendering world. But definitely, it's the way of the future. We need to be working together on projects, not
against one another.
Not against one another. But like, can you believe two quantity surveyors are just saying that? Has the world shifted on its axis? What do you think, Liam? Does that does it seem like it's happening?
Blowing my mind, Eve. I've got a pinch.
She's brought the best out of me, hasn't she?
She really has, Paul.
It's those Kiwis, you know? Got to get them on more often.
Yeah, no, that is really, really interesting. And like I said, I feel pretty good that I haven't taken a beating on today's podcast. It sounds like we have. Yeah. We think
we got any time left for that.
He said, "Have you got any time left?
Have you got any time left? I'll hand that over to you, Liam.
Yeah, no, don't, please. Should we wrap this up? No, I think, honestly, Eve, that has been a really interesting conversation. I actually think that perhaps in the future we could drill down into like a specific on certain more elements of tendering where we can agree more and I can feel really good about myself. But no, that was really, really good. And as always, I will be popping Eve's details, Rev Consultants' details in the episode description. And we would love to hear from anyone. People have been messaging me saying very nice things about the podcast.
Anyone who
we'd
agrees.
That's how I should phrase it. Anyone who agrees with me, send me a message and tell me you agree with me. That would be great. No, but honestly, that's been a really cool episode. And thank you very much for coming
Fantastic.
In.
Fantastic. Thanks so much. Yeah, it's been wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Thanks,
Absolute
Eve.
Pleasure. I will see you next week, Liam.
Yeah, see you. Oh, no.
Actually, no, I won't see you next week, will I? He's on holiday again.
So we'll
be playing Where's Curly again. So anyway, that's been a great episode. And I'll catch you all when I catch you all. See you later, guys.
See you later.
Bye.
Cheers.